Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary
with Professor Jennifer Curtin this morning. Kia ora, Jennifer. How are you doing?
I'm good. Kia ora.
It's a big old time in politics. There's quite a lot to wade into, but locally on campus, it's nice to see a few people walking around in their graduation garb.
Yeah, it's our first week back. There's lots of events happening in real time on campus to sort of welcome students back into the classroom. But yeah, this is our first in-person graduation ceremony for quite some time, and
yeah.
It's down at Spark Arena. It's just been this hubbub with masks of, you know, like, just very happy families and graduands. It's just wonderful. So big shout out to all those successful students and who are getting to celebrate this week.
Totally. It's really nice to see that, eh? It's been a really hard time for students over the last couple of years, and it's definitely impressive to come out the other side of that, I have to say. So it's really cool to see. Let's talk about the latest political polls, because that's been kind of interesting this week. We've seen Labour go down 6.1 points. They're at 38.2. This is in the latest News Hub Read research poll. And Nationals risen 9.2 points to 40.5. Now, what does this all mean? This is quite a big shift, but what does it actually mean?
Well, I mean, National will be pleased. Because Luxon's personal rating is up in the, you know, mid-20s as well in terms of preferred Prime Minister. So they'll be pleased with their reset. I mean, I think we have to recognise that their opinion poll rating has dropped 6.5%.
Mm.
So basically, National seems to be winning back the soft voters that went to Labour,
mm-hmm.
you know, in exceptional circumstances, let's be honest. In the last election, you know, winning 50% of the vote at an election under a proportional representation system is unheard of in New Zealand. So that's exceptional. So Labour was always going to come down. Whether or not we can see this as really bad for Labour or midterm blues is one thing. But I do think there's some challenges for Labour around post-pandemic management. Right, so we're coming out, even though COVID's not done with,
mm-hmm.
people are starting to feel like we're coming out the other side. And what we're seeing in some jurisdictions overseas is that those governments that did really well during the pandemic in terms of keeping numbers down and so on may not necessarily be rewarded for that a second time around because people want the economy to sort of pick up. They want to know that they're going to be okay. And the cost of living crisis is proving challenging for Labor here, but also for governments elsewhere.
Is it just contrariness? Is it sort of exhaustion and contrariness, do you think, that's making people swing in these particular ways? I think most people could agree that there's been a lot of good management over the last couple of years of certain key areas, not perfect, lots of things where stuff's fallen through the cracks, but why are we seeing such a big shift, at least in this particular poll at the moment?
Yeah, I think we have to be aware that there are some issues that aren't getting good cut through. Like, what we know here is that the Greens have also dropped in support, so we'd want to know where those progressive voters, or, you know, those that get polled who might otherwise be progressive, where are they going? Why is their support dropping? So does that mean that there's just not enough being talked about in terms of the issues around climate change that are still really pressing? Like, where is that? Is it that Three Waters, like, I know we're going to talk about this, but the messaging around the importance of Three Waters for health, well-being, but also for environment,
mm-hmm.
And especially given the rising sea change report that came out, right? So I think there's some questions there, and I think some of the, you know, the government has to kind of get the messaging back. They're talking about long-term issues. Infrastructure strategy came out, you know, lots of big picture debts ceiling type ratio, you know, those sorts of more abstract concepts for everyday voters that Labor needs to sort of be thinking, yes, we need to fix the long term, but we also need to be addressing really clearly what we're doing right now for those voters that are hurting. And you know, the big housing development announcement in Auckland and other areas, really important. But did it stay in the news? Did it keep people's minds focused on the things that they are doing? Don't know. The budget is happening on May the 19th. They're going to have to do that really carefully and sell the real positives of that to sort of stall this decline. 38.5% isn't bad if they've got partners or friends, but they wouldn't want to drop any lower than that.
Well, let's talk about Free Waters then. As you said, it's been interesting the way it's been dissected, I think, in the media and talked about. When you see, I guess, coverage of Free Waters, what do you think is there and what's missing in the conversation we're seeing at the moment?
Yeah, it feels like this is a really important package of policy, right, and new ways of organising what is a really critical life source and really important to mana whenua in New Zealand. So, but really this is complex, and what it is it's a Labor, there's sort of some traditional tropes that people who are oppositional to this are pulling out, which is this is a Labor government trying to centralise everything when it should be devolved to local governments because, you know, we know what's best for communities. And it's true, you know, grassroots representation is really important, but we're talking major infrastructure issues to keep, you know, drinking water, wastewater and stormwater clean for everyone. I mean, when you look at the stats on how poor our water quality is and how sick people get,
yeah,
this is really important, but it's costly and it's long-term. So I think what we're seeing is a lot of rural and provincial mayors and councillors, you know, getting fired up about this as a political issue, an issue about democracy, as if their power is, you know, and the power of local communities has been taken away, and it's on the government to sort of fix that messaging. But I also think we have to remember that it's local government election year.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder how much of the noise from some of the local councillors and so on is also, this is a real window for them to get a platform in the national press.
I wonder, I mean, we can come back and talk about this, I think, in another couple of weeks. I'm just worried about the time here. But I did wonder if we are also seeing this conversation about co-governance, that we're sort of seeing the opposition take a very strong, I guess you could say, oppositional position on it. But we've seen this conversation come up not for the first time, but it really seems to be getting its claws into the Three Waters debate in perhaps kind of a sort of a dog whistly way. Would you say that's a fair thing that we're seeing perhaps come out of the opposition's position on this?
Yeah, totally. And I think there's a misunderstanding. And again, the Department of Internal Affairs has tried to fix this with some of their online stuff, that co-governance is not ownership, and that, you know, this is not the same thing, and that, you know, so they're trying to push back. But, you know, like, I think, and to some degree, National is giving the opposition to co-governance to act, allowing David Seymour to run on this, and that kind of absolves them a little bit of it, in a way, because Seymour is Māori. It does that thing which is, you know, like, oh, well, it's not just the white folks arguing against co-governance. So the politics of this, it's unfortunate if they're doing dog whistling, because really it's rectifying, you know, a lot of past problems around co-governance that should have been there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, this is money for jam for oppositional parties that like a bit of a dog whistle.
Well, let's talk about Australia, because they have got an election very, very soon. What's going on at the moment?
Well, this is going to be one of those examples of can a government hold on post-pandemic, and they're facing the same cost of living crises and all of that we have. But what's really coming out in the wash from that I think is interesting is just how conservative and, you like, surprisingly so, I think, the Australian Prime Minister is and his government. So they're really still pro-coal. They're really poor on gender politics. They're refusing a referendum on the Voice for Indigenous Peoples, which is about how to write Aboriginal people into the Australian Constitution. They're bagging out their Corruption Commission because they don't want to build more trust in ethics and politics. And their budget, sort of according to most economists, spruced inflation and increasing cost of living rather than lessened it. So it will be so interesting to watch this to see whether or not he can hold on given how much money he's just spent in his budget. And maybe some lessons for New Zealand, for the New Zealand government to watch and see what to do and what not to do during an election campaign after a pandemic.
It's definitely going to be a very interesting one. Thank you so much, Professor Jennifer Curtin, for speaking with us this morning. I hope you have a great rest of your Thursday and we'll talk to you again soon.
Kia ora, thanks, Rachel.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
Thank you very much.